Welcome back, friends. It's a brand new edition of the Buffer Podcast. It's got that new podcast smell, which is a combination of a new car smell mixed with the sweet aromas of summertime. My name is Tony Tone.
I'm Joel Krausar.
And we have another great battle for you this week, ladies and gentlemen. But I do hope you enjoyed the 4th of July special. I think a lot of folks did. It's kind of nice to throw those in there every now and then, Joel. And we're both showing up this week on the buffer with all 10 fingers. So that seems to be the sign of a successful 4th of July with lighting off fireworks.
Successful 4th of July. Absolutely. And
I say that knowing that fireworks are scary. They are scary. We didn't have any close calls at my house. Although I did think it was interesting, the day after the 4th of July, I woke up and there was just a unlit mortar shell on my front porch. So I don't know how it got there because I didn't have any mortars, but it was just, so I stuck it in a bucket of water, which is what I was using to kind of diffuse the other fireworks. That was a little weird.
Yeah, that's the right thing to do. Those mortars, man. I think that we're going to see some editing to the what fireworks are available laws. I mean, after the now at the national level, you know, the backup goalie for the Columbus Blue Jackets in the NHL was killed by a mortar on the 4th of July. Did you see that story?
No, I did not.
Yeah, 24-year-old professional athlete was in a hot tub at his position coach's house for the 4th of July. They were doing a fireworks display, and the mortar tube tipped over, and then it hit him in square in the chest. And unfortunately, 24-year-old professional hockey player. And that, I mean, that's obviously national news because he's a professional athlete. But, you know, I'm big time in favor of fireworks. I really am. But maybe there's just some that we just don't shoot off anymore for the non-professional display.
That's what I was going to say. Yeah, I think it depends on, I don't know. I don't ever really need any big, high-powered stuff. I leave that to the, you know, the cities or counties or even just the people that,
right.
I think everybody has that friend that they feel like could do a pretty good job. But that's really terrible to hear.
I didn't mean to start the pod off with such a downer story.
But I also feel like every firework that I lit, I always have that moment of like, did I step back far enough?
Is this the one? Is this the one that gets me?
But we didn't have anything big, which I think is probably for the best in our neighborhood. Some fireworks in the world of streaming content and theatrical releases. It's really a good time to be the type of person that enjoys consuming new media. And that's kind of the whole point of this podcast, putting two different pieces of content up against each other in the buffer battle each and every week. I just want to remind folks tonight or this weekend, or depending on when you're listening to this, Black Widow hits theaters and you can do the old premium streaming on Disney Plus. And Joel, this is a long time in the making. It's a big cast, it's a big movie, and it's something that you and I are both interested in seeing. It's kind of weird though, because we sort of know what Black Widow's fate is, given that she doesn't make it out of the Infinity War endgame.
What are you talking about?
Spoiler alert. but I am fascinated with the backstory, and I like Harper a lot from Stranger Things, who's also in No Sudden Move on HBO Max, released this week, and is in Black Widow. But you said that this is something you're going to see, and you're probably going to take your oldest child to see as well, correct?
We're recording this on Thursday night. It just didn't work into the schedule to go tonight to the late showing. So I think tomorrow we're going to go. My oldest is 10 and a half, and he's old enough to go see these movies in the theater. And I think Black Widow is kind of a good one for him to see. So I haven't seen it, obviously, but we're going to have some father-son time, as if we haven't had enough of that this summer with all of our car rides to and from. You know, I don't want to step on my dress socks and Crocs here, but yeah, I think my oldest and I are going to go check it out this hopefully tomorrow night. We'll just have to wait and see what the government has scheduled for us as far as our shore leave, if you will.
81% for Black Widow so far on Rotten Tomatoes, which seems to be kind of par for the course. You don't really see a lot of Marvel movies getting bad scores. Quickly, just a couple other notes. Things that will be released this weekend. Fear Street Part 2, 1978 on Netflix, which I think we're both equally as excited about. And then looking ahead to next week, you have another Netflix original, if you will, a movie called Gunpowder Milkshake. What a great title, by the way.
That sounds like one of the band names we came up with in the writer's room. It's like, what would be a good name for this speed metal band?
Right.
All girls speed metal band, Gunpowder Milkshake. How's that sound? What was our other one? Bubbles in the Bloodstream.
I think it's great. I don't know if you've looked at the cast of Gun. I think that's correct. There's so many good ones. I don't know if you looked at the cast for Gunpowder Milkshake, but Karen Gillian, Lena Headey, Freya Allen, Chloe Coleman, Carla Cugino, Angela Bassett. So that definitely looks like it's going to be a lot of fun. And the thing that Joel and I will continue to encourage is, now that we're kind of able to get back to seeing movies in the theater, that wherever you find yourself listening to the Buffer podcast, you go support your local theaters and get back to the movies and be safe and enjoy. So Joel, for us, that is the Palms 10 movie theater locally here in Muscatine. And
I can see the cart before the horse. I can see the glow from the window that I'm actually recording this podcast in. So
it's really, you could smell the popcorn. We hope to be doing some.
I went there last night.
Really?
Yep. A whole family.
Popcorn?
Saw a movie? We went and saw Boss Baby 2. Family business.
Excellent. Yeah. Not as good as the first, but a serviceable sequel. I mean, you can't go wrong with the family at a family/kids movie at your hometown theater that for you is literally across the street. So it's a win-win on a hot summer day. All right, we're going to get into this week's Buffer battle, which is a good one. And I'm going to fight tooth and nail for my submission into the battle, which is Fear Street Part 1, 1994 on Netflix. And Joel is opting to go with The Tomorrow War on Prime Video. Now, correct me if I'm wrong, Joel. You and I have both seen both of these. Is that correct?
That is correct.
Okay, and I also just want to make a comment. We did not include No Sudden Moves into this, but it's on HBO Max. Steven Soderbergh, it's very good. Benicio del Toro, Don Cheadle, John Hamm, Matt Damon, Kieran Culkin. Kind of a treat. You know, it's not a superhero movie. It's not a horror movie.
It's a heist movie.
It's a heist movie with a couple twists, several twists at the end. Ray Liotta shows up. The Matt Damon thing. I don't know if I knew Matt Damon was in it, spoiler alert, but he kind of shows up as a character in the second act. So check that out on HBO Max. All right. I want you to start with the Tomorrow War, which I'm laughing because I know that I just read today that they're in the early stages of developing a sequel.
Sure.
And I just wonder if they could call it like Yesterday's Battle or something like what are they going to call? You know what I mean?
After Tomorrow War. No. So to the Tomorrow War, starring Chris Pratt, it's well documented on this podcast that I am not a science fiction aficionado. I watch science fiction. I usually am turned off by it. First favorite movies in the entire world. And I don't know why that is. I know why it is. It's just I don't like it. I don't like aliens fighting aliens outside of, save like the Independence Day movies. Star Wars, yes, I know there's aliens, but they're not like invading. It's just everyone's an alien in some way, shape, or form. So the Tomorrow War, spoilers forthcoming here. So we open up on, you know, Chris Pratt and his family. He's on the phone. He's interviewing for a job or whatever, and he's got a daughter and a wife, and his daughter's watching the soccer game. They're at a Christmas party, And all of a sudden, in the middle of the soccer game, this space-time portal opens up, and these soldiers come through onto this World Cup stage, knowing that, you know, the world was watching, and they proclaim that we are soldiers from the future, and we're fighting a war against an alien life form, and basically the world is coming to an end, and they need soldiers from present time to populate into the future so that they can fight this war and keep everything going. And so that's...
Can I just say, just that sequence was... It reminds me, and it's not the same thing, but
you broke up a little bit there.
I really
sorry.
Like the Dark Knight Rises one. I was just saying, I enjoy those like mid large event sequences, kind of like they also did in the Dark Knight Rises with the football game. And it was kind of like, it felt a little hokey at first, but then they come out, like you said, and they're like, "We are you.
We are you." Yeah.
Sure. And you're like, "Oh boy." It does not waste any time getting started, that's for sure.
And so basically now we're in an intergalactic draft. They're drafting people the you know, from all over the world to fight together in this future war. And we find out that Chris Pratt is drafted after he doesn't get his job that he wants. And, you know, his daughter is a super important part of his life. And his wife is a therapist of some sort. And she is actually treating, looks like, soldiers from PTSD before he goes. And the exposition of the beginning of this movie almost loses me. And then I know it sounds like I'm making the case for your movie right now, but I assure you I'm bringing this home in my favor. And then all of a sudden Pratt realizes he's going to go. He gets drafted. And one of the things we learn is that in order to actually get sent, people have already died. So they're not sending people who have a long future ahead of them. They're sending people who die. And in his case, he dies 7 years from that point. And so he now knows, he doesn't know how, he doesn't know what causes it. He just knows that he dies. And so that adds kind of an ominous flair to this whole storyline. And so they go, and it's Chris Pratt, who then in his draft class, so to speak, is right next to another scientist. Oh, that's the other thing. Chris Pratt is a high school science teacher, but he has a combat background in the United States military, and he wants to be on the science side of the military and is unfortunately unable to procure that kind of a job. But we're introduced to, in my opinion, one of the most underrated actors of the last 5 to 10 years. From his comedic chops, but just really just a pleasant presence on the screen, no matter what movie he's in, whether it's someone like Dave needs a wedding date, the Zac Efron and Adam Devine movie with Anna Kendrick and Aubrey Plaza, Sam Richardson. This guy is funny as hell, and he just, that's when the movie takes off for me. Sam Richardson comes in, he's a geothermal expert, clearly has no combat chops whatsoever, but he's being outfitted with his rifle, and he happens to be right next to Pratt as they jump forward to fight the White Spikes, which is the name of these aliens. And it's kind of a ragtag group of soldiers, but they are inserted into a very hot zone where they're trying to recover some intelligence from a lab. And they're being sent into battle by a colonel who we don't really learn much about. The colonel, she's just the person directing the operation. Long story short, after a very challenging battle with the White Spikes, the aliens, they do recover as much of the information as they are sent to at this research lab. It is at this point we discover that the colonel, who's the commanding officer for this operation,
spoiler alert, also not that big of a surprise.
No, it was pretty telegraphed.
Called it.
is Chris Pratt's daughter. Muri Forrester is actually the colonel, so now he is taking orders from his daughter, who is a whiz scientist who is running this operation to try to figure out a toxin that will kill these aliens. And so that takes them now to have to get some DNA captured from a female white spike, because they figured out how to kill the males, but they can't get rid of this female.
Yeah.
And this female, I mean, this was where it kind of becomes a little Jurassic Parky a little bit.
Just
where
a little.
So obviously old hat for Pratt, because he's just rappelling out of a helicopter, helping secure. So it gets a little crazy at this point. But here's where this movie hooks me in. And maybe it's because I have a daughter who's about the same age as the daughter when he gets drafted and jump linked 30 years into the future. I absolutely thought that the chemistry between the adult daughter, and I can't remember her name right off the top of my head.
Yvonne.
She's in Dexter. It's like a Russian last name, right?
Strovsky or something like that. Yeah. Good actress. Great actress.
And the chemistry between her and Pratt as like father daughter, like looking into the future, he was great at that whole storyline. And it had, that's where this movie doesn't lose me. It's because it's outlandish science fiction and outlandish, you know, plot as far as we're going to get this DNA. And then all of a sudden this female gets loose and all of the, everyone comes to, you know, rescue her, whether it's on this incredibly fortified oil rig that apparently still can't hold out. This cruise ship comes out of nowhere. I don't know. That was weird.
Pretty intense set piece. Kind of reminded me of Waterworld.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, they captured the apocalyptic nature of this whole plot very well in their set pieces. The CGI was good, too. I didn't feel like the CGI was... I mean, I was watching on my 4K TV at home. So it's one of those things where it's like, because this didn't go into the theater, there was a real opportunity that it could have looked bad, because you're shooting... Everyone is seeing it on whatever technology they have at home. And I don't have a high end 4K TV, but it's a pretty good one, I guess, because it looked really good. That's not a flex either. I was just an observation. Hardly.
No, I'm kidding. Listen, I watched it on my phone, so I felt terrible, because the whole time I'm thinking, man, this is a summer theatrical release. Like, it's cool that it's on Amazon Prime Video and they have a ton of subscribers. And I think I heard a stat that like Amazon Prime generates like $25 billion annually for Amazon. So like when you think about them financing a $200 million movie, it's really kind of a drop in the bucket. But the whole time I was thinking like, I'm doing this a disservice watching it on my phone. But that's kind of like, you and I are in a similar situation. We have young kids. It can be a little bit of a challenge to get something on a flat screen at a reasonable time. So I often find myself converted to my iPhone 12 Pro Max to check things out. Did you like, not to steal any of your thunder, but did you like how they connected the aliens to having perhaps been on Earth longer?
Yeah, so that's where I was going. So I really liked this. So this was the moment. This movie drove me to tears when he has to see, when he knows that his, so their 7-day tour is an automatic, where as soon as that tour expires, if they are still alive, they're automatically jumped back into the time before they left, or their present day, so to speak. So his time is expiring, and as it's expiring, he is literally watching his adult daughter fall to her death, as she has, you know, taken one for the team and sacrificed her life so that he could take that toxin back to the past so that he can synthesize it and they can engineer it and get more doses so that they could jump it forward and kill the aliens. But it's at that point that our friend Sam Richardson, the geothermal expert, hops in along with his wife. His wife's actually the one who comes up with the deduction that maybe the reason there was no spaceship that anybody saw is because it was already here and they they have a sample from a talon of this spike, and they, you know, obviously trace it back to a glacier where they decide that they can actually maybe find, see if there was already there and they were just frozen in hibernation state. And here's why this movie will win. J.K. Simmons. This guy is the best actor on the planet. I've said it before on this podcast. If J.K. Simmons is in the movie is worth all of your attention. J.K. Simmons plays Chris Pratt's father, and he's a dirtbag. We established that early on in the movie, but, and there's no relationship between he and Pratt. They reconcile. They go to save mankind, and he's kind of that linchpin. And ultimately, at the end, Simmons is one of the reasons why they're able to defeat this this white spike, and they eradicate it before they can proliferate and destroy the Earth. And J.K. Simmons, just, if you need to make a movie good, just put him in it, because that's the key. That's the key to any movie. Name one bad movie that J.K. Simmons is in. You can't do it.
The Josh Whedon version of Justice League, where his role is very deduced.
Nope.
But no, you're right.
It's good because he's in it.
He's just convincing, and he's buff, and I was kind of hoping that like he was going to get to punch one of these white, what are they called again? White Fang.
The White Spikes.
My favorite band name, by the way, the White Spikes. Seven Nation Army.
Do you know my favorite Seven Nation Army anecdote? And I don't want to digress too much because we need to get to yours. But Penn State football, they play the Seven Nation Army song. They got it from a soccer team. But I once witnessed a Michigan fan, you know, try to say, Penn State copied us. We did this in the Big House. We've done it for 25 years. This is like 2010 that the guy said that to me. I was like, 25 years you've been singing that in the stands? He's like, yeah. They said, well, what are you going to do when I tell you that the song was written in 2008? So it's hard to do something for 25 years when the song wasn't released by the White Stripes, I believe, until 2008. I don't know if my years are exactly correct there. I had them correct at the time. But it was just like, come on, dude. No one stole anything from anybody. It's just sports stadium, and you're wrong. Michigan fans, they're the worst.
The Tomorrow War would have a even stronger chance of winning had it been released in theaters.
Yes, 100%. This movie would have been so good in IMAX screen or on a Dolby Atmos screen, XL, like we have.
There's
here.
There's just a lot of... it's like the epitome of a big summer movie effects.
It was kind of like Independence Day. I mean, it really had a similar flow and feel to Independence Day. And I mean that with all honor and respect. It didn't try to blow your mind with some massive politically undermined plot line. It was aliens are bad, aliens are coming. Maybe if we stop global warming, this wouldn't have happened. That's probably the only real, you know, political undertone that you could try to deduce to it. It's just aliens are bad. Aliens are here. Let's keep them from destroying all of us. Unify the world. And also, we can jump people back and forth 30 years.
Yeah. The time travel part of it is interesting.
But I liked how they didn't go into too much detail, so you couldn't sit there and pick the nits at it. It's just, this is what it is. Accept it for what it is. Suspend the disbelief and just go with it.
I think they do a good job. I like when movies will, when it comes to casting, they'll look at things that are popular. And that's where, like, our friend Yvonne, you know, you referenced that she's been on Dexter, and she's also in The Handmaid's Tale. So, like, nothing is bigger in the world of streaming than like the latest season of The Handmaid's Tale. Now, I say that having never seen a single episode.
I was just gonna say, do I need to confess that one? Because
I should have saved it for that. I mean, I could still use it. My wife has seen every episode and she's just hooked. So that's kind of what was fascinating when I was watching this. She's like, oh, the girl from The Handmaid's Tale is in that. And I'm like, see, that's cool. Sam Richardson had a great reoccurring role on Veep. He was on Veep for like 40 episodes.
That's right.
And then, of course, Chris Pratt and J.K. never hurts when you have the movie stars to carry the films. It is nice to see Chris Pratt in not a Guardians of the Galaxy movie, because you kind of, they kind of get lost into those characters. You know, it's like a Downey Jr. He's played Tony Stark, Iron Man so many times. You kind of forget when he does like a due date and you're like, oh yeah, that's right. He's more than just Tony Stark. So that's kind of like how I felt. I like Chris Pratt. I always have. I think he's just gotten better and better as an actor. But at the end of the day, I just don't know if I personally come back to the Tomorrow War for a second helping. That's that's kind of where I always go to is, am I going to watch that again? I don't think so.
The other guy who kind of jumps off the screen is Mike Mitchell, and he played Cowan. He kind of was the bearded, clumsy, kind of oaf soldier that was in their battalion, and he goes all the way back to Parks and Recreation with Chris Pratt. He's the guy who always is asking about the new paunch burger in Parks and Rec.
That's right.
And so it's just, he's always that guy to me. He's the paunch burger guy. So it was just good to see those two because they have chemistry. We saw it on Parks and Recreation. Yeah, the few interactions that they have.
Well, with my pick this week in the buffer battle, we're not going to time travel, although we kind of are.
Yeah, and there's a little bit.
I'm here to say that Fear Street Part 1, 1994, part of the first part of a trilogy on Netflix, was such a nostalgic trip. I had heard about this trilogy, had seen one of the, whenever they released like the preview, and I was in from the jump. I think that, and I'll get into the plot in a second, but I think what this does really well, first of all, it's on Netflix. It's very well made, and the soundtrack, Joel and I had texted each other about, the soundtrack is just on point, and they truly capture the essence of the 90s and kind of the 90s teen slasher movies. This is a little bit smarter than that, but it really just made me, I've told you, one of my favorite movies ever is Scream, and they just tweeted this week that the next Scream, the relaunch, comes out January 2022, is finished. So they finished editing it and scoring it, which is exciting. So I love a good scary movie. Fear Street 1994. I don't know what else I can say except it's a lot of fun. And there's two more of them, but I'll give you just a little synopsis. They're in a small town, Shadyside, Ohio. There is kind of an ongoing, reoccurring theme of teen death and massacres, and they're able to kind of link it back to this fear witch. So there's a little bit of, like, you know, a little bit of the paranormal combined with, is, you know, are you really going to buy into it or not? I thought the casting was very strong. Dina Johnson, one of the main characters, Sam Frazier. So this is Kiana Madera, Olivia Scott, Ben Flores, Maya Hawke, Ethan Hawke's daughters in this. It's really fun. So you know the whole time that there's two more of these. But what I'll say, Joel, is I felt like Fear Street Part 1, 1994, felt like a complete film. Now, having said that, it does kind of pave the way for the next one that drops on Friday, July 9th, Fear Street Part 2. I believe it's 1978, if I'm not mistaken. But did you get that sense that, like, it felt like it had a beginning, a middle, an end, even though you know that there's two more coming?
Yeah, and I think that's smart by these makers of this to break it out into these, almost like an anthology series. So you've got this 1994 set piece, so we can do the beginning, middle, and end in the 1994 timeline, and then it's going to jump back to these other years, is my understanding. So
yes,
but they flat out just pay homage to Scream in that opening scene. Well, the hook, line, and sinker, it pulled me in. I'll read my text to you without the swear words. watching Fear Street just started. Malls are scary. Holy bleep, this is a great show. We go from Closer by Nine Inch Nails to Cypress Hill, Insane in the Brain, right into Creep by Radiohead. That's 1994 in a nutshell. I mean, I was in it from that point forward, and you know, you've got the whole Scream opening, and it takes that twist. It doesn't. When you're watching that, you're like, oh, okay, this is the movie, and nope, that particular killer is dispatched right away. So it's really, really, really good.
Yeah, and I think it's fascinating how they kind of incorporate these other killers, both the one that'll kind of show up in the Fear Street Part 2 1978 that kind of looks like, you know, your Jason Voorhees character, and then going further back with the third one kind of to the origins of your witch and what may or may not have happened to cause this curse. But yeah, I mean, even just in those beginning sequences where it's like the classic, you know, teen high school, you know, it's the big game, and then right. They just, it goes poorly.
Well, the rich, like, town, poor town, you know, yeah, you've got all like that.
The bus sequence is intense.
Yeah.
And so it's interesting because it captures a lot of that nostalgia that I kind of really enjoy having grown up in that period of time, born in 83. So this is right in my wheelhouse. But then it also does a good job of, you know, because surely there may have been things hinted at some of the movies that we had in the 90s, but this very much out in the open, like our main character is romantically involved with another main character, and it's two females. And that's something that you never really saw back in the day. It was kind of always like the prototypical like jock cheerleader. So I thought it's so well done. It's based on R.L. Stine's work. And
which that blew my mind when I read that in the research.
Yeah, and I'm here to tell you, I had no context for the source material. I certainly was an R.L. Stine fan up until a certain point with the Goosebumps series, but I, as far as the Fear Street books, have not read them, full disclosure. But really, really enjoyed it. It's 79% on Rotten Tomatoes if you look at that kind of thing. And I think what is tough for me putting this into a battle, it's almost not fair for the Tomorrow War, because the Tomorrow War is just one 2-hour blockbuster film, and Fear Street has three parts to it. And I think it's only going to get better. Now, having said that, it wouldn't even be remotely fair to put all three Fear Streets against one Tomorrow War movie, Joel. But when I look at content like this, I told my wife, watch the Tomorrow War. It's enjoyable. But I told a lot more people about Fear Street, because I think a lot of folks, even like yourself, you're maybe a little bit on the fence with it. And a couple of my other friends were on the fence with the Fear Street. You know, they thought maybe are we too old for it? Is it not for us? But I'm here to say it's enjoyable. I think regardless of if you're in our age range or certainly younger, I mean, it's cast for younger people.
Well,
right?
I think too, you're such a fan of this genre too, of movies. I mean, that's why I think you think it's better, because you like this type of movie more than I do. I think Tomorrow War is one that I have a heck of a lot easier time recommending to my coworkers. And it's also one that I like could see. I see myself revisiting Tomorrow War long before I revisit 1994. I'll watch 78 when it comes out, but that's just because
you're interested in seeing how it progresses.
Yeah. I wouldn't be watching either. I wouldn't be watching any of the Fear Street probably if it wasn't for the podcast, to be honest. It's not something I would seek out and just watch.
See, and I'm the type of person that, you know, we're sitting here recording. It's 9:45 Central PM Thursday. I'm thinking, man, in 2 hours and 15 minutes, Fear Street Part 2 will probably be live on Netflix because it'll be midnight. It'll be tomorrow. Okay, so if I'm taking you,
do we
for
have
what
to paper
saying,
rock scissors to see who wins?
Well, do we have to put it in the old randomizer? I think your point about the coworkers is interesting. So if I were to, in my office, I mean, both of our offices are unique in their own respects, but I don't.
So I think maybe let's put it through this prism. Mm-hmm. If your boss came to you and said, "I want to watch a movie this weekend with my wife or my spouse," which one would you, between these two, which one would you recommend to the person who signed your paycheck?
Well, Joe, I work for the taxpayers, and I would tell the
public school man. Okay, so
I would tell the great taxpayers of Muscatine County.
Are you running for governor or mayor now? Is that what's happening?
You can't go wrong with a good. No, I think that's a good point. Mass appeal. It's tomorrow war. If that's how we have to strip this down, is mass appeal. It's tomorrow war. I mean, it's Chris Pratt. Listen, there are probably recognizable cast members of Fear State that maybe you and I don't know, like Maya Hawke. Sure, we know who that is. But yeah, I mean, that's again. If Tomorrow War was released in theaters, I think it wins easily. But if you're going just based on mass appeal, Chris Pratt, J.K. Simmons. Versus, you know, kind of an upstart younger cast. Now, that being said, Fear Street is phenomenal, and I personally like it more than Tomorrow War. But if we're judging it into the buffer world that we're in, mass appeal, it would have to be.
I'm not saying necessarily just mass appeal. I'm saying what do you think you're going to have a higher batting average on and recommending to people, and them coming back to you saying, "I'm glad you recommended that. I really liked that." That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, but I notoriously like to push people out of their comfort zones. But I think,
well, that's evident by when you. Never mind.
if you're saying, like, if I'm in a building leadership meeting, and they're like, "What'd you watch this weekend?" and I said Fear Street, and then I started to explain it, I would get the look like, "I don't know what the hell you're talking about." But if I said, "I watched the new Chris Pratt Tomorrow War movie on Amazon. It's ridiculous, but it's fun. You think I should watch it?" Well, yeah. I mean, check it out. You know. But by the way, like, Fear Street, horror, teen, slasher, good soundtrack. Tomorrow War, giant CGI aliens, kooky premise, like, predictable. You know where it's kind of going to go. And by the way, again, my overarching theme with those kind of movies, not a lot of real consequences. Like, you know that it's going to end.
So here's the thing. I'm going to zag here. So in my attempts to defend the Tomorrow War, I'm like finding myself mad at myself. Because here's what I'm sitting here thinking. Yes, I would recommend the Tomorrow War to my boss, looking at it through that prism. But I also know that now I'm thinking to myself, man, I'm pissed off at myself because I should have told them that Fear Street is better. Because I the more I think about it, Fear Street is better, and I should do what my friend Tony does and push people out of their comfort zone and push them into actually trying to watch the better thing. I think of it like a solution-based salesperson. If I'm a car salesman, yeah, sometimes that Pontiac Bonneville is in 1994 is just a more mass appeal car. But really what that person needed was the Ford Festiva because it better fit their right. budget. Or actually, that's a bad analogy. What they needed was the Chevy Tahoe, which, even though it's a little bit more expensive and they're out of their comfort zone on the payment, it's the right vehicle for them. So I'm going to make the decision for you so you don't have to try to be so diplomatic. Fear Street is the winner, and that's what's going to move on, because that's what we should recommend based off of just being a better made attempt at storytelling.
I will save my gloating for after the break. Hang on. We'll be back with more The Buffer Podcast. We hope you had a good break. Thanks for tuning in. The Buffer Podcast is weekly. It's all things content, movies, streaming, documentaries, sports, new releases, our old favorites. And we think it's fun. We hope you're enjoying it. Wherever you get your podcasts, Apple, Spotify, Google, Anchor.fm, please rate, review. And the biggest thing you can do is subscribe to the podcast and then tell your friends and follow us on all of the social media outlets. Joel, it's a big deal. If people can do that for us, we'd appreciate it as we continue to do this. I think we're coming up on, I don't know, like, we have a pretty good streak of, is it almost 20 straight podcast. Yeah, I mean, we haven't missed a week. So
we're getting older, and it's just getting harder to do all the things in our life, but we're able to crank this podcast out week by week by week.
It's a good thing. All right. Before we get out of here this week, because we are trying to watch the clock a little bit, we're going to give you our buffer guilty pleasures. And since you started the battle this week, I'm going to go quick. And even though you referenced it earlier, I think it can be a guilty pleasure because my family has watched it so many times. And I did say that it's not that good, but it's The Boss Baby, The Family Business, because it's in theaters. Joel said he took his family to see it in theaters, and my family has watched it probably six times via Peacock. I think I've seen it once in its entirety. And it's, for me, Joel, this is kind of like a wallpaper movie. Like, I can come in and out. There's things that go over the kids' heads. I can appreciate the casting. But at the end of the day, it's fine. Like, I don't think we need a third one. Can I say that?
It's going to happen, though. They just make too much money.
I don't think we need it, though. It seems like this was pretty panned. But that's my guilty pleasure, is the amount of times that my kids have requested to watch The Boss Baby, Family Business, and the ability to do it on Peacock. So shout out to Peacock.
It's got some weird moments. I'll just say that. It's totally good for kids and family. It's a good family movie. And like you mentioned,
weird.
Casting's good. James Marsden, Alec Baldwin, Eva Longoria, and Jeff Goldblum, man. He's so J.K. Simmons and Jeff Goldblum. Can we get a bucket list kind of like old man trying to explore themselves and find meaning of life with J.K. Simmons and Jeff Goldblum? I want that movie.
When my wife realized that it was Goldblum, which is not hard because his voice is so distinct,
her
reaction was like, why? And I was like, why not? Like, he's popular. He's having a great renaissance. Not that he ever went away, but yeah. So that's my guilty pleasures. The Boss Baby.
And so a couple weeks ago, I cut you off from telling a Chicago public transportation story. And it was because I knew I wanted to bring this movie up as a guilty pleasure here in future weeks. And so I'll, when I'm done with this, I'll let you tell your story of the games you used to play on the train and the buses and the Chicago public transportation. Because this movie could have just been solved so much easier if people had just kept cash or had a Metro card. It would have been. There's a lot of holes in the plot point of this movie, but it's a movie that I think about a lot as a child. And I remember watching it with my cousins Angie and Melody. That was the first time I ever saw it. Have you noticed a lot of my movie memories have to do with my cousins? And that is Adventures in Babysitting. I could not have had a larger crush on Elizabeth Shue than I had. She was Karate Kid is my top three favorite movies of all time. Elizabeth Shue was my dream girl as an 8-year-old, 10-year-old boy, and you know, just then when I became like a teenager, I saw a Cocktail. Like, it just, the Elizabeth Shue journey was a real one. I will stand for Hollow Man any day of the week as well. That is a movie that I absolutely love. But The Adventures of Babysitting, just such a fun movie. Obviously, you know, twists and turns throughout every frame of the movie, and then you get Vincent D'Onofrio showing up as Thor. Ooh. in the end, young Vincent D'Onofrio, like 22-year-old Vincent D'Onofrio, and just freaked out by the girl who's obsessed with Thor. But I love this movie. But again, if they had a Metro card, they could have just gotten home and, you know, paid for the tow the next day.
It's a great summer movie released in June of 87. Chris Columbus directs.
Such a good Chicago movie. It's a great Chicago movie, too.
It is. I have a very strange, this is not a brag, but this is just a weird connection to this movie. So my cousin's aunt, so my aunt Maureen, rest in peace, her husband Uncle Bob the Undertaker, who gave me Tone, he's called me Tone my whole life, so that's where I developed that for the old radio name. Long story short, Bob's sister Linda Gamboni stunt driver on Adventures in Babysitting.
That's awesome.
True story.
So what was the game you guys used to play on public transportation in Chicago?
So when I was in high school and we would be driving, we'd be taking the elevated train, the Blue Line. Shout out to the Blue Line train from the Oak Park Avenue stop into downtown Chicago. My friends and I would play the game Bomb, which is kind of like if you've ever played the game horse or pig in basketball, except this is with movies or TV shows. So you would serve up an actor to your friend. So I would say Kevin Bacon, and then you would tell me, so let's do it. So I'll say Kevin Bacon, then you say a movie that Kevin Bacon was in, and then I have to try and think of someone else that was in the same movie.
This
so
is go easy. Ahead, just Hollow Man. Yeah.
Okay, so then I would say Elizabeth Shue, and then you would say
Adventures in Babysitting.
Right, so then I would have to try and remember that you just said that Vincent D'Onofrio was in Adventures in Babysitting, and then it would go back to you, and you would say
the Magnificent Seven
remake, right? And say I didn't know any actors, I would say pass, and then I would take a letter. So it's just like horse. I would have B, and then if you got to OMB and you spelled bomb, you lost. So it would really test your knowledge to see how obscure things could go. And it is kind of like the 6 degrees of separation, 6 degrees to Kevin Bacon. But we used it to pass the time riding the train. And it was always fun. Like people, my friends, I don't have the example off the top of my head, but everybody would always try and have that one either obscure actor or movie that people wouldn't remember. And this is before smartphones, by the way.
What?
So you couldn't cheat, but it is a fun thing to play. And if you think you're kind of like a movie buff, I encourage you to try it, to just test your knowledge to see how well versed you are.
A fun fact, though.
Yes.
The first elevated train built in the Midwest, the L, constructed in 1891, was in Sioux City, Iowa, where nice. I went to college. The elevated train, the L in Chicago, finished construction in June of 1892.
Wow.
So the Sioux City L was the predecessor to the Chicago L. However, it is no longer in existence. So
it was just interesting.
That's one of the fun facts they teach you when you move to Sioux City, is that they actually beat Chicago to the L.
I think that's awesome. I have so many fun stories from riding the train that we can save for later podcasts. We're going to head into the confessional and the buffer confessions as we share things that were, well, that we haven't seen.
Confessions.
I ain't seen it.
Okay, Joel, you're up first in the buffer confessions.
So I went back and kind of looked at one of the big summer blockbuster lists on the highest rated summer blockbusters on Rotten Tomatoes. This movie has a Rotten Tomatoes score of 92 on Rotten Tomatoes.
Ugh.
It is from, I'm trying to find the year here.
Got to be 97 or
98. 1997.
Thank you.
It features a villain named Castor Troy.
Ugh.
In this movie, the acting juggernauts that are Nicolas Cage and John Travolta face off. Never seen it. And I was shocked when I saw what its Rotten Tomatoes score was. Because I've never heard anybody be like, this is a good movie. And all of a sudden, maybe it actually is.
I think it's hot garbage. That's my hot take. I really do. My dad had a bootleg copy.
Should Vin Diesel be in the reboot?
Anybody could be in it. My dad had confiscated, and this is all, he's retired, so it doesn't matter.
Statute of limitations has expired.
Oh, yeah. My dad had two bootleg VHS tapes. I'll never forget when he gave us Space Jam. And these are filmed with the camcorder in the movie theater. So the quality back in the day is terrible. So we had Space Jam bootleg on VHS, and we had Face Off. And I thought Face Off, and I still, and now I haven't, I will say this, I haven't rewatched Face Off in at least 10 years. My initial reaction is to tell you, don't feel bad about not having seen it. It's super weird. They literally change faces, but it's so dumb because I don't like it at all. I know a lot of people that will ride for this movie.
Bill Simmons from The Ringer. loves this movie. They did a rewatchables of this movie.
And I think you can love it like so bad it's good. But
can you love it like people love the Fast and Furious movies?
I don't think so. I think I just don't know what like what the quality. You know what I mean? Like there's at least Fast and the Furious ends with coronas and families. This is just like trash. I that's my opinion. I don't like it at all. And you should not feel bad about confessing.
Well, I don't feel bad. It was just
having not seen it.
It was the one. It was the only movie over 90% on Rotten Tomatoes that I hadn't seen as far as in the summer blockbuster category.
That's tough. I feel like people are going to be surprised. And again, this is one of those movies for me that I know enough to be dangerous. And I know that I've seen pieces of it, but I can't sit here and tell you
this movie
that I have seen
changed
Point Break.
I can't believe you haven't seen it. I can't believe
in its entirety.
We need to watch it together. It's a movie I will watch fortnightly. I love it so much. It changed how I viewed Ronald Reagan forever. Keanu and Swayze.
And I don't even get why. Like, I don't even get that reference.
The masks. That's what they wear, Ronald Reagan masks to rob the bank. It's. Did you see the reboot of it later? The one a few years ago? It was good.
No.
It was good. Extreme sports.
Yeah, I didn't know that Catherine Bigelow directed this. And I like her. I love The Hurt Locker. But, like, like I said, I feel like I know enough. Isn't there a sequence where they jump out of an airplane?
Yeah, a lot of them.
Okay. And is there, they're surfing, airplane?
They are the coolest bad guys. And like it to me, it was the first anti-hero movie that I saw.
Okay. That's an interesting take. I can't sit here and say I'm very vague with the details.
Promise me you will watch it sooner than later.
I know that it's beloved. If it's easily accessible, like I don't want to pay to see it. I'm assuming I can find it on one of the streaming platforms that I'm subscribed to. But yeah, I will check it out because I do like Keanu and it just seems like it would be something that I would enjoy. But that's why we do the Buffer podcast and that's why we have that feature called the Buffer Confessions.
It's on HBO Max.
Perfect. Okay. All right. Let's get out of here with Dress, Socks, and Crocs, some parenting and life wins and losses along the way. Slap it, tap it,
wait. Dress, Socks, and Crocs.
All right. Well, it's summer, and the summer continues to be interesting in the Midwest. This is going to be kind of like one of those things that I don't know if my mom listens to the podcast.
We'll find out.
I think it's safe. But so locally in Muscatine, Iowa, where we are doing this show, we have a pool, like a community pool that you can buy either a membership or passes, or you could just go every day and pay to get in. It's called the Muscatine Aquatic Center. So my mom, who also has lived here for the last 3 years, took it upon herself to buy our family several of these passes. There's adult passes to get in. There's kid passes. My wife lost the pool passes. So we thought. So she took the kids once. I took the kids once. I've taken them again. I had to pay to get in. And my mom, God bless her, she bought the passes. So she's like always thinking, today's a good day to take the kids to the pool. You have the passes. Use the passes. You got the passes, right? So I was like a day away from telling her because it kept coming up. Like, and I can afford to take my kids to the pool, but I was going to tell her, like, Mom, we lost the passes. And I came home from work on Tuesday, Joel, and on the kitchen counter were the Muscatine Aquatic Center passes. And my wife said that they just kind of, you know, you have that pool swim bag that has like the side pocket. They just kind of slipped in there. But holy cannoli, I was dreading at 37 trying to tell my mom that we lost the pool passes that you bought that I didn't ask her to buy, by the way. It was a very nice gesture and we appreciate it. But I don't know why. I think it's my Irish guilt that was like, oh my gosh, this is going to be so bad. Henry, stop.
Hey, that's perfect. Dress, Socks, and Crocs, interrupted by the the dulcet tones of children. So yeah, that's the worst feeling in the world, especially when you know that somebody, you know, went out of their way to give you a nice gift and you either didn't take care of it or it got broken or you lost it in that regard. So that's not just your Irish guilt. I think that that's just called having a soul. And
my wife isn't going to listen. So, and she is the type of person to misplace things more frequently than I am. So I was also kind of being that guy, like, how could you miss, where could, and then she was on the defense, like, do you know how tough it was to take three kids to the pool? And it's all valid. Like, you just
don't,
I put my foot in my mouth a lot. So,
yeah, there was a Mike Birbiglia who has a stand-up bit where the punchline is, what I should have said was nothing. I mean, that's he should write a book about marriage and call it that. So my dress socks and Crocs is just it has to do with fireworks. And so we were at my in-laws for the 4th of July, and my two youngest don't like fireworks. They like to watch them. They don't like the sound. And so my brother-in-law is a, you know, hunter. And so he had the headphones for like shooting that, you know, you can hear, they're battery powered and you can hear, but then when something has a loud boom, they, you know, block the sound out. And so we gave those to my younger children, but like an idiot, I didn't turn them on.
Oh no.
So my kids had them on. There's some sound muffling quality to it, but I was like, why are they not working? What is going on? Why are they still crying? These things should work. Like, and so I was like, is this really just a placebo effect? Do they not work? And then my brother-in-law walks up and is like, you gotta actually turn the switch, and they they have to be on. So,
those are some nice noise canceling headphones. You got to turn the switch. Wow.
Yeah. So, and they're pretty cool. That's amazing. I mean, I put them on to test them and they work, but just goes to show I'm not a shooter. I don't own that type of equipment. So I don't really know how it works. And
I love it.
My bad. That's my dress socks and Crocs moment.
All right, we're going to get out of here. Fear Street, part one, 1994, your winner on this week's Buffer podcast. Again, you can't go wrong, though, with The Tomorrow War or Fear Street or No Sudden Move. There's a lot of good content out there, and we hope that you'll continue listening to this show and consuming all the content. If you ever have any feedback for us or suggestions or recommendations, you can leave them on the Buffer social media outlets like Facebook and Twitter. And please subscribe, rate, and review this show. And Joe will be back next week. I'm anxious to see what we have in the Buffer battle next week.
Yeah, big shout out to a friend of the podcast, Joe Wieskamp, listener of the pod. I know he's listened a time or two. Former Iowa Hawkeye. Can't believe we have to say that now. So Joe has graduated with a degree in finance from the University of Iowa, forgoing his final year of basketball eligibility. I saw a mock draft today where he was slid into the last couple picks of the first round, drafted by the Bucks in the first round. Again, that's a mock draft. That's not real, but we're just a couple weeks away from the NBA draft and Muscatine Zone. That's a big deal for our town. So congratulations, Joe. Good work. And you don't need any compliments from us because you've earned everything that you're getting. So
well, I will say Joe Wieskamp is on Cameo now, so maybe we have him do a Cameo plug for the podcast because it's pretty affordable.
That's
a terrible idea.
I actually am hot. I'm getting on another podcast this weekend with some sports people to talk about the whole name, image, and likeness thing, which obviously doesn't apply to Joe now that he's, you know, signed with an agent and pursuing professional sports, but that's a whole different discussion that I would love to talk more about, but this isn't the podcast for that. That's for a different feed.
All right, friends, we'll be back next week with a brand new episode of The Buffer. Take care and thanks for listening. Goodbye.